Longtime lawmaker Mike Ellis died on Friday. He served in the Assembly and Senate for a total of 44 years before retiring in 2014. Ellis was loud, he was passionate, and he was powerful, ending his career as the Senate president. The Republican lawmaker from Neenah didn't always toe the Scott Walker line and lamented after his career was over at lawmakers' isolation from the people they serve. But people were afraid of Ellis. Steve Walters is a senior producer at Wisconsin Eye. He covered much of Ellis's career, mostly when Walters worked for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Steve, welcome back to the program.
Carrie, good morning. And thank you for reminding me that as a Dane County resident, I get to pay a new wheel tax here in a few weeks.
Good to know. I just moved here, so I didn't realize that. So how do you describe Mike Ellis?
Oh, he's one of I've been covering lawmakers since Iowa in 1971, and he's in my top five of the most interesting and fascinating characters that I've simply ever covered. Just the bookends of his career, he never forgot where he came from. He was the son of a Neenah mill worker. When I did a profile for him late in the 1990s for the Sunday magazine of the Journal Sentinel, I said, "You have to let me into your house. You have to let me meet your wife." And he said, "No." And then 6 weeks later, he said, "Okay." And I learned then that he never forgot where he came from. He told me about driving his bike to take his dad, the mill worker, food, dinner. It was very interesting. That was the first part of his career. And when it ended, he knew when it was time to leave the Capitol. So I've covered some legislators who really don't know when it's time to leave, but Mike knew when it was time to leave in 2014. He was absolutely a very fascinating character and a rascal.
Right, and a rascal. Yes. So he knew it was time to leave. Some people say that he was forced out.
I think he knew that he could have run again. It wouldn't have been very pretty. But I think he knew he could have run again. And as he said in my exit interview, look, when we come to an era in Wisconsin politics, when someone approaches you in a bar and they're wired and they are recording the conversation and they are attempting to get you to talk about something potentially illegal, that's the time to leave. He just understood that he was an old-time politician from the 70s through the early aughts. And that was a time when you did work more across the aisle. That was a time when you did negotiate, when it wasn't more my way or the highway, whether it's a Democratic or GOP-led majority. I respected Mike because he knew when it was time to leave.
So actually, we have that tape that you have when he talked about why he was leaving and how things have changed.
The idea that someone would walk up to you and pass themselves off as a constituent back in 1985 or 1995 and be rigged with all this high-tech equipment and get you to say something that's going to get you in trouble later never existed back then. We wouldn't have even thought of that happening. That just wasn't on the plate.
So it sounds to me like what he's saying is, you know, the nefarious ways that I worked worked for me, and now the nefarious ways have changed and now they're working against me. Am I reading too much into that?
No, I think you're being very accurate. The whole era of social media where everybody's a journalist, everybody has an opinion, everybody's got the First Amendment, that's not the web of political deals that Mike did from the height of his power in the 1980s up through 2014. That was just not the way he worked. He understood the personal nature. He was willing to work with Democrats, but he also stood up for his principles. I mean, he was not shy. He would go into any governor, Democrat or Republican, and just tell him what he thought. Incredibly outspoken. Just a very, very colorful man.
So I understand that Mike Ellis was honest with you about his perhaps less than honest tactics. Tell me about the lies.
Well, I'm going to use the I read the obituary. I'm sorry. I read the news story in the Appleton Post-Crescent, and I'm going to quote former Senate Majority Leader Dale Schultz.
Okay.
And Dale, who I also covered for decades, says that Mike had a tendency to, quote, bend the truth. And I'm going to give you two examples that Mike told me, so I want to be sure your listeners know this is not something I'm getting first or secondhand. Well, first, in 1982, Ellis, then a member of the Assembly, was trying to oust the Democratic Senator, Gary Goyke, And Mike told me he got a call late in the campaign from a news reporter, and I don't know which organization. And the news reporter said, Mr. Ellis, I understand the campaign is getting nasty, and Representative Goyke said he's received death threats. And Mike said, what I did then was put my hand over the telephone and tell an aide, a campaign aide in the office, write death threats on that chalkboard or the whiteboard. And then Mike said, yes, it's a really tough campaign. I'm looking at death threats myself. That's story one. Story two, a few years later, I think it was in the 90s when Mike was the majority leader, and at one point it was a razor's edge, 17 R's, 16 D's. Mike wanted to keep his party in power. He wanted to keep being the leader. Mike told me he saw a Capitol reporter from the Fox Valley, which is what Mike represented for so many years. And he stopped the reporter, and he said, oh, and this was in the days before a general election. And he said, oh, I just got this poll. You want to see this poll? And longtime Democratic Senator Rod Moen is in trouble in western Wisconsin. And he gave the alleged poll, the fabricated poll, to the reporter, who then asked the Democrats for comments. And the Democrats then rushed some of their campaign staffers up to Rod Moen's district. Well, bottom line, wasn't a real poll. Mm. Rod Moen wasn't in trouble, and it diverted Democratic resources away from Mike's team that he was trying to get reelected. And I just my mouth fell open when Mike told me stories like this, because it goes back to what Senator Schultz said. Mike could, how do we say, well, Senator Schultz, bend the truth.
Interesting. We are talking about Mike Ellis, who died on Friday morning. He died in his sleep. He was 77 years old, and he retired in 2015 as president of the state Senate. We're taking your calls on this, too. What did you think of Mike Ellis? Did he amuse you? Did he anger you? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. That is 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Is Mike Ellis a politician that we're not going to see the likes of in the future, or is he just kind of as corrupt as the rest of them? 800-642-1234. We'll be back with Steve Walters in a moment. It's a morning show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Mike Ellis was a commanding presence and a colorful character. He was also a policy wonk and generally well-respected, even by his opponents. The longtime lawmaker, who retired in 2015 as president of the Senate, died on Friday. He was 77. Longtime State House journalist Steve Walters, currently with Wisconsin Eye, is sharing his knowledge of the man he wrote about for a couple of decades. And we are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Steve, I want to talk about Ellis's role in Act 10. Was he initially for this? Did he come on reluctantly, or was he just kind of gung-ho for this?
Carrie, that's an excellent question. I think he, Mike was actually taken aback at the scope of the changes that Governor Walker pushed a few days, literally after taking office. I think he privately, he would not take his concerns public. I think he privately went to the governor and the governor's aides and other senior GOP legislators and said, look, this may be a bridge too far. I'm not comfortable with this bridge too far. Can we dial it back? Remember, Act 10 has two components. It said public employees, you will pay more for health care and your pensions, and it also largely scrapped the collective bargaining system for public employees that Wisconsin was the first to implement. I think Senator Risser sponsored that. So to answer your question, I think Mike had deep concerns about the governor overreaching. Do we need to make the major changes? But when push came to shove, Mike voted for it. However, just a little nuance. On the day that the 16 Democrats left in 2011, he was very close, I say, with some Democrats, including former Senator Tim Cullen. And he gave Tim a chance to leave the Capitol and join the other 15 Democratic senators at Clock Tower Inn in Rockford, just as a matter of personal courtesy. In other words, he could have come in, banged the gavel, demanded that the it's a very arcane provision, but he, that state troopers track down Democratic senators. but he gave Senator Cullen and the Democrats a chance to leave the state, and that was just another one of the most traumatic things I've ever covered in Wisconsin.
Interesting.
Capital.
So just as a recap for listeners who may or may not have been here in 2011, Democrats left the state so that they could delay a vote on Act 10, correct?
Yes. Yes. They stayed away for, I think it was between 1 and 2 weeks, and the Republicans stripped the bill of all the financial provisions, which meant it would only take a vote of a simple majority. And they got that simple majority, no Democratic votes. The next day, the Democrats returned to the Capitol. I think the next day, the governor signed it. It's just an amazing era in Wisconsin Capitol politics.
He was Mike Ellis was a campaign finance guy and kind of a policy wonk, but he did not like Citizens United. We're going to play a clip here.
Current law has taken many noble, good people, and it has corrupted them on both sides of the aisle. The system corrupts.
The system corrupts. He followed up these thoughts in an interview with Sean Johnson, who is WPR's State Capitol Bureau Chief, where he talked about the idea that not every person can grow up to be a political leader because now it requires tens of millions of dollars to become governor or any other like major statewide office. Thousands of people would want to run, but where do you get that if you don't turn to the special interest groups, he said. Talk to me about his view of campaign finance reform.
Well, I remember he worked on that issue as those clips attest, and as Sean can attest. He cared deeply about campaign finance, tried to cut a major deal, and his partner in that was State Senator John Erpenbach. And at one point they had a deal, and then Ellis thought that Senator Erpenbach went back on the deal. Now I hope John calls in soon to give his version of that. Mm. But Ellis was deeply hurt by he thought John breaking what they had was a deal on campaign finance, and it never really moved. He really cared about campaign finance, but the man was a budget master. I mean, when he sat you down in front of his chalkboard to talk about the structural deficit, to quote figures on interest rates and all that, I mean, it was like, okay, I'm a first grade student and this guy's giving me a master's tutorial in state budgeting. It was very, very impressive, and he always worked with his chalkboard. All the offices he used in the Capitol, he hauled the damn chalkboard through all those offices. And when you were summoned to sit through it, it was quite overwhelming. I always thought, though, Mike, as I said, was a rascal. And here's what I thought. Well, okay, I'll sit through your chalkboard. I will actually learn something. And Mike prefaced it by saying, now, Walters, you're one of the few reporters who can understand this. But then when I left the room, I always thought that Mike would have said, Walters, he's dumb as a box. But I really enjoyed covering Mike and interacting with him because he and I were to some degree budget wonks. An incredibly colorful man. His two trademarks, the dark aviator glasses. And
I've noticed that, yes.
And the hairpiece, which he would make fun of himself on the floor of the Senate
You know what? I've noticed the fact that he made fun of the fact that he was short. Like, you know, when he's talking about growing up with his brothers, he was the shortest of them. Was he a short guy?
Yeah, I got him pegged at maybe 5'6", 5'7".
Interesting. I've only seen him, you know, like standing up on a dais wielding that gavel. I've seen him in, in videos. One of the things I want to go back to campaign finance, though, because one of the reasons that he lamented how things have changed. And maybe one of the things that got him to retire was that he was caught in a video trying to set up a super PAC, which violates campaign finance reform, finance laws. He said he didn't know it was illegal. And once he was told it was illegal, then he didn't pursue it anymore. What do you think of that? What do you make of that?
Okay, you have to understand, Mike's, when they got done at work in the Capitol, Mike would go to the Avenue Bar and hold court, and then he would stay at the end of the park, so he would come back, and this conversation occurred at the end of the park. And, you know, Mike liked brandy, and I kind of do too, but he was approached at the end of the park about a potential illegal deal. Now, do I believe that Mike was naive? No, I think Mike knew. I know what we're talking about here is in this gray area, but I also think that Mike was smart enough to shut it down. But the idea that it showed up on a secretly recorded audio tape just threw him for a loop, and that was one of the reasons. Look, this politics in 2014 is not me. I'm going to exit stage right here.
So one of the things that he, in an interview with you, he said that perhaps there was dirty tricks in this video, that he kind of blamed the Club for Growth, which is the Koch brothers group. Do you think that's true?
Well, Mike was so, how did Senator Grossman put it? I mean, Congressman Grossman, I covered him as a senator. Now he's obviously a congressman. Mike was, this is quoting Glenn, quote, fearless, never intimidated by other politicians or high-priced lobbyists. He spoke his mind. And if Club for Growth, which is generally promotes Republicans or always promotes Republicans, if they commissioned someone to come in, he would consider that beyond the pale and a part of a political scene now and a political dynamic that he didn't understand. So he didn't hesitate to tell governors, these are ours, what he thought, right to their face. And but then when he came out, he voted for Act 10. He voted for concealed carry. He had tremendous problems with his expansion of the choice and voucher program, but he made he was not quiet about making his concerns known. But choice did expand from Milwaukee to Racine and now statewide. So when push came to shove, Senator Fitzgerald, the current majority leader, who says in a statement, I learned everything about politics from Mike Ellis. Senator Fitzgerald, when he says, I don't know if I have the votes, it meant, where is Mike Ellis? Mm. Where is Rob Cole? Where is Dale Schultz? They were just the big three that could block things.
And they showed up.
Oh, yes, they did.
We've got a caller here, Nate from Milwaukee. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I was just going to add that I thought that the video maker who's been caught selectively editing his videos in the past to make it look like somebody who said something actually didn't say it, or rather said something other than what they actually said.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he has been paid by political organizations to make these videos, but I was of the impression it was actually Scott Walker's campaign rather than Club for Growth that cut a check to the video man after the Mike Ellis video. And Dale Schultz, who I respect, is still around as part of the Republicans that were trying to restore honesty or bring back honest elections for the state legislature rather than gerrymandering.
Thank you very much for that, Nate. I have a question, Steve. If the governor's campaign actually signed a check, wouldn't that be a violation of law?
I don't know, not a lawyer, but the Governor Walker would have to get along with Mike Ellis. So why would his campaign send somebody surreptitiously to trap Mike into a tape? I don't think that'd be the governor's campaign's modus operandi.
You think that that just enraged Ellis and made him more dangerous to Walker?
More dangerous, no, because these people had been friendly adversaries and disagreeing for a while. And the governor's statement was, over the weekend, Mike Ellis was a giant in the legislature and bigger than life in Wisconsin politics, both true. They disagreed, but I'm hard-pressed to see the governor or his people trying to trap Mike.
And yet it did lead to Mike Ellis's resignation.
It was a factor. No, he didn't resign. He chose not to seek re-election.
That's true. That is true. Steve Walters is a senior producer at Wisconsin Eye and the former Madison Bureau chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He helped us explore the legacy of longtime political leader Mike Ellis, who died last week. Steve, thanks for joining us for State Capitol Report.
And just a P.S., Mike Berger, a longtime aide, wrote a letter to the Appleton Post-Crescent saying this: every night before he went to bed, he'd call his wife, Sandy, and say, "I love you." Just let's end on that positive
note. Let's end on that note.
Okay. Thanks, Carrie.
I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.